From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. Before the break, we got a rundown of some of the things facing Brian Kemp when he is sworn in later today at Georgia Tech's McCamish Pavilion. Now to more on the legacy of Governor Nathan Deal, whose eight-year tenure as governor is ending. Governor Deal has had his critics, certainly, but has also earned praise for initiatives related to business, education, and criminal justice reform especially. Many of these achievements are symbolically represented in his portrait with Georgia's First Lady, Sandra Deal, which will now hang at the state capitol. James Salzer covers state government and politics for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, and he's with us to talk about Deal's legacy. Welcome, James.
Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for being here. Also with us, Maria Saporta. She's founder of the Saporta Report and contributor to the Atlanta Business Chronicle. Maria, thank you so much for being here.
I'm happy to be here.
All right, let's take a look back. 8 years ago, the fog of 8 years ago, early days of the Great Recession, certainly deepening political divides here and across the nation. James, what kind of climate did Governor Deal inherit when he took office?
He walked into, to put it mildly, a mess financially. The state was still recovering from the Great Recession. Teachers were still being furloughed in a number of counties. State employees had been were still being furloughed. Education, particularly, was hard hit by the recession, and there had been a lot of cutbacks. He also came into a situation where there was virtually no room for error because the state had spent down reserves to $100 million, roughly. $100 million sounds like a lot of money, but it's actually only one day's what it costs for one day for the state government to run. One of his big platform items in 2010, obviously, was jobs, which made sense because the unemployment rate was very high.
It was over 10%.
Right,
when he
right,
came in.
Right. So for the state, it had been the second recession in like 6 or 7 years. Governor Perdue had gone through two of them in his 8 years. Financially, we were way down from what we had been in 2008 in terms of what we were spending on various state programs.
So, Maria, let's look at economic recovery. Things did, of course, eventually turn around for the nation and the state. So was this a case of the rising tide lifting all boats, or did Deal spearhead particular policies that made that transformation easier in Georgia?
Well, back to the situation he encountered, the Great Recession was especially hard on the banking industry and on the real estate industry, which were two areas of focus in Georgia. Deal became really systematic, not wanting to spend a lot of the state's money, but kind of build within a budget that existed, and focused on some high growth areas, and the film industry and the film tax credit is one such example.
So tremendous growth in the film industry, certainly technology, mm-hmm. manufacturing, even at a time when it was not having a robust growth in the country, a couple of industries that have seen expansion. So did his policy show support for any particular areas of the economy?
Well, I think what he was looking at is what did business need? How do you develop or prepare a workforce to serve industry? He realized early on that there were jobs to be had, just the skill set wasn't there to fulfill those jobs. So he tried to bridge the people who are unemployed to give them the skill sets so that they could actually fill some of the jobs that Georgia companies needed to fill. He also has been, you know, very proactive when it comes to economic development. He made that a key priority, and you saw the results of that with Georgia being named the number one state to do business by Site Selection magazine for 6 years in a row, and a lot of great economic development successes, a lot of companies picking us.
On social issues, he's also, it seems like he has been very cognizant of the state's image and what is good for business in other ways. For instance, last week, Speaker David Ralston described, for instance, religious liberty legislation as a solution looking for a problem. And that's kind of the way Governor Deal has dealt with a number of social issues that if it's a possibility that it's going to hurt Georgia business, he's probably going to avoid it.
Let's go to that. The 2016 Religious Liberty Bill started out as a conflict between some conservative Christians and LGBTQ advocates. But Deal did veto it, and that was after it threatened some businesses in Georgia. Do you want to pick that up, Maria?
Yeah, that was the moment of truth in my mind. He could have gone either way. He clearly was getting pressured by both sides. I think that when he made the decision to veto that legislation, it sent a signal that Georgia was not going to go down the road that North Carolina or some other states had gone, and that we were going to really be sensitive to business concerns, issues of discrimination. Immigration was not as big an issue there, but I think Deal has used the lens. Is this going to help us in attracting business, or is it going to hurt us? And that's been a really healthy lens for our state.
Well, let's hear a little bit from his speech after vetoing that bill.
I do not think that we have to discriminate against anyone to protect the faith-based community in Georgia, of which I and my family have been a part of for all of our lives. Georgia is a welcoming state. It is full of loving, kind, and generous people.
Significant because, you know, this is a governor that came in. He was originally a Democrat when he entered the state Senate.
Yes.
But, of course, ran as a Republican for governor. When I look at his legacy as an outsider, you know, someone who didn't live here during that time, seeing that he throws a lot of red meat to his conservative base in some places, you know, obviously gun rights legislation, fiscal policy, certainly, but not necessarily a predictable line. So where do you see him as somebody who ran from as a Republican who kind of governs from the middle? Is that a correct assessment?
You have to look at it also politically. And I remember talking to someone close to him a few weeks ago, and I said, I wonder if Governor Deal of 2010 could win the Republican nomination in 2018, and I kind of doubt it.
Interesting point. So he's not conservative enough now for the Georgia.
I don't see him, having ads with guns or, you know, talking about. I mean, maybe he would have. His policies don't go along with maybe the skew closer to Trumpian.
In that same time, Georgia has become increasingly, let's say, purple in places, blue in other spots, not so much a solid red state. So is the key for his success then, is it the electoral body or is it the way that he worked with the legislature to get things passed?
I've covered governors dating back to Joe Frank Harris, and I can't remember a governor who had the same kind of working relationship with the legislature. One of the things I spent a lot of time on is a budget, and his team would negotiate very openly with the House and Senate leaders while it was going on. And at the end of the day, they'd reach an agreement, and there really wouldn't be a whole lot of fight over what the state spent money on. They kind of decided, and he let the legislature play a role in that in a way that other governors haven't.
The way I would describe him is being a very practical leader. That relationship that was definitely got a lot of press of his friendship with former Atlanta Mayor Kasim Reed, having a Democrat in the mayor's office, a Republican as governor. They took it on the road. They made it a national, you know, shtick, so that to show, hey, in Georgia, we can really make things work in a bipartisan way. That sent a message to companies, to businesses, to governments. And again, I saw it as a relationship that was one that came out of practicality. Deal didn't have a lot of good contacts in the Obama administration, and having a close relationship with Mayor Reed, they were able to get that attention. And I think they both benefited from being able to work together across party lines.
He also made criminal justice reform a hallmark of his administration, not something that was certainly a frontline issue for a lot of Republicans, let's say nationally. Why do you think that was a focus for Governor Deal? And why do you think he was so successful?
I think he looked back at his I mean, his history, he was a judge, his son is a judge, he has seen the criminal justice system up close, and I think this was a very personal issue with him.
Yeah, and throughout the last several months, almost every time he talked about criminal justice reform, he brought people's names into the storyline and talked about the people who either worked at the governor's mansion or people that he met who said how their lives had been changed because of the courts that had been established. And inevitably, tears would come to his eyes, and his voice would start quivering, and he'd have to stop, or otherwise he'd really start crying. I think there's nothing that reached deeper to his heart than criminal justice reform.
That's Maria Saporta. She's founder of the Saporta Report, a contributor to the Atlanta Business Chronicle. James Salzer is also with us. He covers state government and politics for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution and has been for some time. So, James, as you look back over the Deal legacy, one of the most lasting impacts has been or will be on the state is judicial system. Convinced state lawmakers to expand the Supreme Court, enabling him to appoint most of the current court. He expanded the appellate court, appointed his protege Chris Carr, attorney general, new solicitor general. So what does this mean? What are the ramifications for the state of Georgia to have the head of the executive branch so significantly reshape judicial?
And you left out he pushed major pay raises for the judges, and he appointed some of the people he appointed, as you mentioned, Chris Carr, but he also appointed legislators to some of these positions. So he opened up legislative positions. So there's a whole domino effect on Governor Deal setting the agenda. He also pushed and won approval for the most expensive building in the state, which is the state court building that's going up down the street from the Capitol. I think it's $115 or $120 million is what it's going to cost. And if you drive by the Capitol area, you'll see it going up.
Going to be named after him.
And it's going to be, there's already legislation that's going to name it after him. This is like kind of a dream for, I know a lot of people who vote one party or the other because they say they want to see, you know, they want to make sure their person is appointing the Supreme Court, right? So this is kind of a similar thing. I mean, he not only got to, don't use the word negatively, pack the court with the people that he wants. And a lot of these people he's appointing are as I can say as an older person, fairly young. And so will be there for many, many, many years. So his legacy will live on certainly in the legal community.
Well, how about the idea of packing? I mean, he made dozens and dozens of other appointments during his tenure. State lawmakers convinced voters to pass an amendment that reshapes the Judicial Qualifications Commission. Critics said that was payback after the watchdog group, Judicial Qualifications Commission, hit too close to home with some of the lawmakers. Yep. So I'm wondering from either of you, what does it mean for balance of power in Georgia that the executive, legislative, so have such a tight grip on the third branch of government?
Well, one thing that did disappoint me is a lot of his appointments tended to be white males and white male Republicans. I think there was an opportunity for him to bring a lot more diversity to state boards than he did. One of the problems Georgia always seems to have is that good old boy network, especially now that every one of the constitutional offices are white male Republicans.
When you put the lineup of the Democrats who were running for statewide offices and you put the Republicans running, other than Tricia Pridemore, who's on the PSC, there were no statewide nominees who weren't white men.
Both of you mentioned Governor Deal and education, and certainly Sandra Deal, the First Lady, had a huge impact and push, a former teacher herself. What, if you were to summarize it, was his legacy in the educational realm?
He kind of ran on education in his second term, and the things he specifically talked about didn't pan out. I mean, he talked about wanting to rewrite the state's school funding formula, which was created before I got here in the 80s, mid-80s. And he ran in the same buzzsaw every governor who's ever tried this has run into, that there's so many competing interests. Inevitably had to cost more money, and they didn't want to spend more money. I mean, I think they said it right up front: we're going to redo the school funding formula without spending any more money, and that was going to kind of a non-starter. Last year, he had the money for the first time to fully fund the school funding formula since before Sonny Perdue's first recession. So that was roundly applauded because that had been something that educators had complained about forever, that the state wasn't actually putting in as much money as it was supposed to be for schools.
And he was definitely aided by First Lady Sandra Dew. I mean, she was loved by the education community. She went and she would read to first graders in every county in Georgia. I think she had gone to 1,000 different schools by the end of his term. And literacy was just a huge issue. And I think that if Governor Deal had been reelected for a third term, which obviously is against the law, I think that would have been a major area of focus for him.
Maria, I'm hearing a big fan of Governor Deal in you.
Let me put it to you this way. My expectations were quite low when he first ran. He had been labeled the most corrupt congressman before he ran, and I had a lot of trepidation about what kind of governor he would become. And I have to say, in many areas, I was very pleasantly surprised. I wish we had been able to make more headway on the whole Medicaid expansion issue. He basically punted that to the legislature that basically killed it. I wish he had been stronger on some gun carry legislation in terms of limiting that. I think he did have to throw a few bones to the conservative base. But overall, I think he was a governor that did not govern in a partisan way, but really looking at what was best for the state of Georgia.
You already mentioned, Maria, that he can get weepy when he's telling his stories. I think he's admitted he's a sap himself.
Yep.
What are the bets he's going to cry today?
1,000%.
Thank you so much for speaking with us. James Salzer covers state government and politics for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
And Maria Saporta. She's founder of The Saporta Report and contributor to the Atlanta Business Chronicle. Happy Inauguration Day.
Thank you. Yeah, back to you.
On Second Thought is produced by Elena Rivera, Leighton Rowell, LaRaven Taylor, and Amelia Brock. Tyler Morris is our engineer. Amy Kiley is senior producer. I'm Virginia Prescott. Stay with GPB today for live coverage of the inauguration, including a special early edition of Political Rewind coming up at 1.